Sometimes you wonder if we should have been there in the first place.
Today is Thursday. Today is Tuesday, December the 30th?
Yeah,
2014, the Recovery Plan Review Committee.
It's all set. Now 2:02, we'll call the meeting of the Recovery Plan Review Committee to order. Present committee members are Commissioner Richardson and Commissioner Smith. LHA staff is Executive Director Ben Stevens, Valerie Brown, Carlos Pizarro, and Brenda Goodman. Commissioner Smith, have you had a chance to review the minutes of our December 11th, take your time. I had the advantage of being here a few minutes early. After reviewing the minutes of the December 14th meeting, I'll accept a motion to accept to approve the minutes.
December 11th meeting, right?
December 11th, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So moved.
I second. And roll call. Do we need one? We don't need a roll call. No, just only two members, and we both agree. Okay, so the minutes.
The minutes
are approved by consent.
It is. It was November 13th meeting.
Huh?
He said to accept December
11th. No, December the 11th.
Yeah,
he corrected me. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay. Commissioner Smith corrected me.
Thank you.
It's December 11th, yeah.
He was paying attention.
Okay, so the vote, the minutes are accepted and approved. We'll follow the agenda as submitted. We'll now have old business. Executive Director Stevenson, give us the update.
Yes, sir. Give you all a copy of this. And you all know we had some questions or a little concerns about the CLCC budget and its impact on overall LHA budget. And staff was tasked with reviewing the numbers. I will walk you all through what we found. And
what is this a picture of on the cover?
Oh, that's Bartow.
LHA
property. Okay.
I didn't recognize it.
It's very well, I know.
It looks nice, doesn't it?
Is that really ours? Yes.
Yes, it is.
Wonderful.
The manor at West Bartow.
Okay. You want to do it live?
Okay. I'm glad.
Okay. The first thing that we wanted to go over was to do a comparison of 2012 to 2014, because the concern from the last recovery plan review committee was whether or not we were at break even, if there were going to have to be some adjustments to the budget. And so the key things that you needed to see is where we were for each year. For example, when you look at business activities for 2012 plus the COCC, and this is cash. This is actually going from Yardi, the cash report. Business activities was positive, but we were well overspent in COCC by $1.1 million, so that made negative cash flow of $921,000. Then in 2013, we started doing a little bit better. Business activities had a positive cash flow of $358,000, but COCC was still struggling and overspending to the tune of $768,000, which made a net loss of $410,000. But when you look at the reports for 2014 in cash, business activities actually had a positive $354,000, and COCC still was operating at a loss because we were implementing the RIF. We had to do severance packages for the 7 employees that were no longer with the agency. But it came out to a net gain of $2,311. So the question of whether or not we were going towards a break-even budget or had a break-even budget, by implementing the RIF in 2014 to eliminate the salaries associated with those 7 positions, you just barely broke even. And so 2015, because we paid out all the severance, we have actually paid out the vacation, because per our policy, we pay out the 240 hours. And now the vacation, of course, is not on the books. We have the sizing that we need to move forward in 2015 to have a break-even budget. So when you look at 2014 and we're doing our monthly meetings with the board, you should see us trending within budget. There may be some adjustments that we have to explain a variance. For example, association fees were anticipated monthly, but they're actually being paid quarterly. So when you get January's report on association fees for like Hampton Hills, it'll look like we're over, but then we're not having to pay association fees monthly. So when you look at the totals for the quarter, you'll see that they're within the budget. So I'll give you an opportunity to absorb the first slide on the recovery and progress report before going into the detail in the second slide. And so 2012 is just, again, is highlighting that we had income coming in, well, cash flow coming in from business activities in 2012, but our COCC was $1.1 million, almost $1.2 million over budget.
Mm-hmm. Those same numbers are wrong.
Yeah, same.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. We just broke them out.
Okay.
Yeah. For 2013, again, business activities had additional cash flow more than it had the prior year. COCC was still operating at a loss, $768,000 for a net loss of $410,000. And then in 2014 is where you actually see, with all of the activities that we put in place by implementing the reduction in force, even though we paid out severance and it lowered our cash on hand, we're actually at break-even between business activities, even though COCC is operating at a loss. We broke even. Yeah, so
the 191 for youth bill in 21st century, is that included in the business activities or COCC, or is that included anywhere?
No, 191 is actual funds that we're trying to collect.
It's no money.
Okay, so that's without those numbers, we were still positive 2300.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Okay. So what has happened with 21st century, the state has some questions. Of course, when they have questions, they send the whole package back. So there's 94,000.
Which we think is illegal, but that's another topic.
They sent the whole package back, so we're responding to their questions to collect that, but of course, not able, for when we got the package back, not able to get it so we could actually collect the money in 2013. So when you look at our financials, when we do collect it in 2015, it'll have to be a note in the financials. And then we had the issue with the youth bill. Not that youth bill has a problem, but youth bill trying to get myself and Kimberly set up in the system. Ray locked himself out. And so we're unable to do draws until they actually go through all the paperwork. So So even though I know we have...
And the locks. In locks?
Well, it's actually... Let's they don't locks. Do it in locks. Okay. It's the state system. So, again, once we get that worked out, then I'll be able to submit that draw probably the first couple of weeks in January.
Okay.
But that's why those funds aren't collected.
Okay, 191 is
the total.
How much of that are we going to collect?
Right.
That is what we believe is collectible.
Okay, but they had some questions about some of it.
They had questions about when, with 21st Century, they had questions about timesheets for field trips, those type of backup documentations, not actually the financial data, but they were missing some documentation they felt on the actual
program operations.
And our concern with how they do their business is that, you know, it's been my experience that when you get a draw, especially one that's like a $700,000, you usually approve what you can approve, and then say we're going to disallow this until you provide the supporting documentation, as opposed to you rejecting the whole draw attempt for you to start over. But that, to me, doesn't make good business sense, and it hurts your partners because you're basically withholding funding from them. And unless they're drawing interest on the monies that they're sitting on, it makes no other sense to do that.
Right, and that amount of that draw was $94,000, but with the youth bill, nothing was disallowed. I've just been added, Kimberly and I, where we can do financial reporting, but we can't actually go in the system and draw down funds.
Okay.
So that it's two different offices.
Okay.
So one has approved for me to report the financials, but the other office has to approve for us to be able to go into their system and draw down the funds.
So what's the actual breakdown of that 191? How much is youth bill and how much is 2019?
Okay, there are three youth bills. There are two grants for youth bill 20. There's youth bill 2011 and youth bill 2014. And so just quick and dirty, it's between 2011 and 2014, you're looking at around what,
It's close to $100,000.
Yeah, because it's $94,000 in 2014.
And not all $100,000 from youth bill, also the other grant.
Gilwell.
Yeah, the
$20,000 from Gilwell.
I didn't think
so. Of that 191, when you're able to draw down the youth bill money, that's going to come to how much?
Let's see.
Pretty the way it said $113,000, so that's y'all.
Yeah.
About $113,000?
Yeah.
In round numbers.
Right.
Okay, and what's the total for 21st Century? That's billable, but what do you think we're going to get?
No, what's built, what we actually think we're going to get is the $94,000.
From youth bill?
Yeah.
No, I'm talking about...
From
21st
Century.
Yeah,
21st Century. So 21st Century, you're betting you're going to get all that money?
Yeah, well... There was $124,000 in the grant. $30,000 we know we're not going to get.
Okay,
$94,000 was actually billable. They claim they didn't get the deliverables. They have the hard copy of it. They want it on their website.
Okay.
So it actually all has to be uploaded. I'm coordinating with Caesar and Earl to get that done because as far as she's concerned, us having it on paper means nothing. So they turned everything back.
So that's what Castling is trying to, is helping us out with?
No. That's not completely different.
Okay.
Yeah, it's their website reporting. It doesn't count to them if the backup documentation with the sign-in sheets aren't actually on their website, and it's several months throughout.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, what Castling will be helping us with is, like I said, of that 4.0 to or whatever,
that's the other side.
Right.
Okay.
They'll be helping us with that, you know, because we're thinking that we're going to actually owe that amount of money because, for example, with the money that we used to purchase all the manor that paid for out of the public housing reserve, and since we still have that asset, why should we have to pay that money back?
Yeah.
You know, and then even more so once you sell that asset, why can't you pay out the proceeds from the asset, from the sale of that particular asset?
Okay.
So
we're talking about $94,000 from 21st Century, around $20,000 from
Gilwell. And everything else from
Gilwell. $77,000.
And you have other miscellaneous, you know, program that almost
$77,000 from Youth Build.
Yeah.
Okay. And that doesn't include
that. Don't include public housing in Section 8.
Okay.
That does not include.
And I was going to say, the other thing that we have is FSS. In the 2013 grant, it's like $17,000 in there that will reimburse salaries. It was submitted, but the money hadn't actually hit our account.
It was approved, too.
Yeah, it's approved.
Okay, so.
But it probably won't hit our account because it takes 3 business days, so it'll probably be Wednesday because we put it in last week.
Okay.
Even though they were trying to get it done before the holidays, it probably won't hit until Wednesday. So that $17,000 that we know that we're getting is not reflected. It's already been approved. It's not reflected in the 191.
Okay. So right. So our potential cash flow is 193.
At least.
That's what you're saying.
Yes.
We expect.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
At least that much.
What's our seal?
Because you said that other, what was the last thing you said that's already been approved? That's not included.
And it's not in the 193.
That's 17.
That's $17,000.
Okay.
That goes towards 2013 salaries.
Right, okay.
Okay.
Just what's the COCC balance right now?
Oh, the COCC?
Yeah.
As far as what
we're looking at, according to this, we're looking at a positive of about 2,311.
Well, that's combined business activities and COCC. When you go to the FDS, they're separated.
Yeah.
So the business activities, and I'll just say it, but I know you probably already know this from looking at the financials, is that business activities, they want it to be fees that we receive from the properties, having the third-party entities, the development entities, the partnerships. COCC really should only be collecting fees if we're managing public housing units or managing the Section 8 program. And Castelline emphasized the importance of that moving forward because all the changes that are happening with Congress and what they're pushing for, because they're looking to, right now COCC is non-federal. Mm-hmm. But because of all the write-ups that's happened with the OIG about housing authorities not
monitoring the
COCC, not
monitoring housing authorities who are not, they're concerned about how they track the funds for COCC.
Because there are a lot of agencies that have due to public housing. Mm-hmm. So Congress is saying, if you go back to federalizing COCC, then you'll be able to control the fees that come in there. So one of the things that they've recommended is that moving forward, you make sure that you have business activities, separate entities that can receive fees off the partnership, which we've already done. That's Westlake Management.
Okay.
And because Westlake Management manages the partnerships, those fees are unrestricted. They're not commingled in with COCC. Then the fees that we have off of COCC is just Section 8 admin and public housing admin. So the good thing is this agency was already thinking about that. I guess thinking that at any point in time they could go to COCC being federalized instead of defederalized.
Okay. But my concern is always cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, so, we're all concerned about that.
That's I
just want to make sure where we are. Because we're expecting a lot of money, but within the next few weeks, but I want to make sure that we
don't have faith in your federal government.
If it's not in the bank, pay the bills locally.
That's right. That's right. So I just want to make sure that you've looked at cash flow and you're feeling
right. Well, if that goes into the next slide, because if we talk about what we had looked for on cash on hand,
mm-hmm.
when we did the 2014 budget. Right. We had cash on hand that was going to provide money for COCC in addition to development activities. Because, again, even though the cash is coming in from deferred developer fees, that's already reported as income in your prior year's financials. So even though you can't collect the fees until 2 years later, it still is earned as far as the financials are concerned. So it's showing up in 2010, 2011 financials. So even though we have collected between Bartow, Colson, and Bonnet $430,000 this year, it's not income because it was already
booked.
booked as fees in 2010 and 2011.
Yeah, and one of the oversights made was not to the proper precautions, you know, once those were recorded on the books. And that's something we'll be very mindful of going forward when it comes to fees.
But it's also why when you talk about business activities, it's not unusual, it's industry standard, that you collect fees in a different year from when you actually earn them. Right. So you earn them early, you don't collect them until years later. So it wasn't misleading or a non-standard practice to say we were going to need $850,000 from the reserves to cover salaries, because if we were a private development company, that's what we would be doing. The problem is, because we don't have any new deals going that's going to earn new income, if we do that, we're going to run out of reserves, as evidenced by the comparison of 2012, 2013, 2014.
Yeah.
So what we had asked you for and what was approved in the budget was $850,000 from cash on hand to cover the staff that we had prior to the RIF. What you've actually used from cash on hand between those two properties is $212,000. Everything else, we've found ways to make the salaries and staffing work internally, and that went back to when Steve Nolan's company, and I know you dealt more with Ray, was going and looking at maximizing fees, because his housing authority historically could have collected more in management fees, asset management fees, bookkeeping fees, and never did, because they were looking program-wise. They said, if we collect the fees and we have less money to operate our programs, so we'll just collect less fees because we have cash on hand. Mm-hmm. Now that we don't have the cash, we know that we have to collect those fees. Some of the fees you can only collect if you have excess cash. So when we got the 2013 audited financials, found out that there were excess cash on the property, then that triggered we could go ahead and collect the fees.
And when you look at the actual reserve utilization, the 212, and you compare that against the uncollected funds that we use to support Youth Bill and 21st Century, and then you separate COCC activity, you're going to see COCC was actually in line with the budget, but we had to use those funds to support those two programs, basically.
And then the other thing we thought was important, that you realize how much deferred developer fees you have left to collect, because, again, these are tax credit deals. You have a compliance period. The developer fees are part of basis. They have to be paid before the end of the compliance period. Mm. The property that has the most amount of fees left on the table happens to be Renaissance, because we bought that developer out the deal. So that's another thing that we're going to have to work with, you know, Castelline and probably Reno Cavanaugh, to come up with ways to actually get those fees paid, because you're looking at, we got 2017, and it's highly improbable in the waterfall that you're going to collect that just by going through the waterfall. Yeah. So we have to have creative ways, and that was one of the things that I know that will be discussed in the executive report about alternatives like us purchasing Dakota, those different type of strategies to get those fees paid, but not necessarily out the door, because you don't want to trigger an IRS event, because $1.3 million in fees are paid, IRS is 30% off the top. Mm-hmm. But if it's really on paper to make basis so you don't get negative adjustments on your tax credits, that's a problem. So that's why another thing that we need Castelline to work with the attorneys to work out.
Okay.
Yeah, but the bulk of that $3.4 million is Renaissance. Colton Bonnet and Bartow have been paying Colton and Bonnet have been excellent at paying their fees. There's only $150,000 deferred fees left at Dakota. Bartow, because of the subprime mortgage crisis and the agency not getting the tax credits on the dollar that was projected when they did the pro forma, that pro forma projected at closing that when it was all said and done at the end of the compliance period, there would be $754,000 left in deferred developer fees to pay. So that deal was closed knowing that between now and year 15, some creative strategy would have to be made to get those fees paid. But the reason why we believe that the prior administration did that is because you committed to have tax credit application, you put it in, you've been awarded. If you don't go through with the deal, then you put yourself in a situation where you'd be blocked and can't submit the tax credit, which could hurt you for a 5 to 10 year period. So they had to make that deal work, even though the market had collapsed at the time Bartow was being developed. And doing that was better than leaving, than being where you couldn't submit for tax credit.
Okay, so we got some work to do.
Yes, we got lots of recovery still to do. So the last and final slide is just to summarize how the $1.5 million that you had in cash on hand, what happened to it over this year period for 2014. So your business activities reserve was about $1.5 million. Then we had talked about in the board meeting where Bonnet even got tax credit applications, in order to submit the application, they had to do some consulting. They borrowed money from the general partnership that they had just formed to do those tax credits. They, even though they got a pre-development loan from the state, those expenses that were part of that pre-development were not allowable costs. You can't give it to HUD because it's not a HUD expense, it's business activities. You have to put it in the deal somehow, and then the deal expects to get paid back. So that 112 was actually owed to the partnership and paid back. Then as far as with our audited financials showing that we had a due to public housing in the amount of $5.3 million, the correct thing to do on your audited financials when you submit the FDS is to take wherever you have cash and to apply it towards what is due to public housing. Even though the transaction could just be done on paper, the Miami field office would not approve us doing any development activities moving forward unless they actually saw a transfer of those funds physically from the non-federal account to the federal account. So the $1.1 million is still with this agency, but it is restricted because it's in the public housing operator reserves and has, it can be used for future development for affordable units, but you can't use it to cover salaries.
Right.
And then you've had some transfers between programs just with the timing of all of our grants are really reimbursement grants like Youth Build, 21st Century, FSS. So even though you know you're going to have the cost on your payroll because you have to do the activities, we have to wait until we actually incur the cost. So some of the things, timing, you had to take money from reserves to make sure you could cover payroll, and then it goes back. And a good example of that would be in, I'd say in 2013, we had transfers that happened, but when you look at all the different activities, because you have 14 business activities that comprises business activities, 14 properties that comprise business activities, and you look at all the other programs, once you start cleaning up your books at the end of the year for due to, due from, a lot of it fall out just because everybody ends up owing somebody. It should be zero, but or very close to it with the anticipation when January comes, the grants that you have to wait to get reimbursed on because you didn't incur the expense until the end of December is a timing issue. But when you look at it, we've had 46.8 in transfers between programs that have not been reimbursed back at this point in time as of today. And so when you look at that, our cash on hand would have been $241,000, but then we got deferred developer fees from West Bartow. that put us at 304. So.
Okay. But before I move on, for the
that's
record,
what we anticipate being in there the end of the year tomorrow.
Yeah, right? That's what mm-hmm. right.
Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Well, if we don't transfer them any from Renaissance, yeah.
Yeah. And one thing we want to let y'all know too, we're going to recross the numbers. And so when this, see this particular slide presented to the full board, some of the numbers may change, but just so you know, that's how we want to give a more accurate report. This is what it is as of today.
Okay. Just for the record, I want to show that Commissioner Pimentel has joined the meeting. Okay. I think all the rationales make sense. It's a question of going into 2015. Realistically, what's our challenge?
Going into 2015, what's our challenge is we've got to change how this agency thinks. Because it's been, we've had
with the changes and how it changes, if that's why we've already started that process, we've got to continue with it.
Yeah, the thing is we've had for so long reserves. We're talking about
that's
at
right.
least a million
right.
in reserves. Mm-hmm. It's always easy to say, oh, I don't have time
right.
to do that draw. I can do it later and then get reimbursed back. And what has happened, draws get forgotten about because you got staff that come and go that may no longer be here, and then someone is going through at the end of the year trying to reconcile due to due from and say, wait a minute, we did collect that money from HUD, but how come it never went back to development or COCC?
Yeah.
So those are the type of thing. And you don't ever get the exact amount back when you do it that far.
Yeah. And then plus, one of the biggest changes you're going to see is that we're going to make sure that we draw down on
well, yeah,
our funds
but,
on a timely basis.
Hit all those grant
exactly.
yeah.
dates
exactly.
and
exactly.
locks dates and so forth
yes.
Every month.
Yeah. The problem that we had this past year is that as far as drawing down funds, there was always one person who could draw down funds,
mm-hmm.
not multiple people. The way we are setting things up with the state, with HUD, is at least two people who can draw down funds. The other issue that we had is, again, not having people cross-trained. So if someone left and everyone's scrambling and then trying to get a consultant to figure out what was done. Since we recognize that we can't ever be dependent on any one person, I know it's easy to do that when you had the same ED for 17 years, the same comptroller for however long the prior person was here. You just always think they're going to be here. We got into certain situations where staff's not here and you're trying to get on the account.
And then also get a better grasp on the internal controls. And I think especially when it comes to the finances, because I think that was one of the problems we had, because we didn't say cash, we didn't say hit the accounts or whatever. You know, we would basically say, okay, we'll do this fee and we got it. Then that person said, well, I need this cash over here, I need this cash over there. And they were not informing upper management. We got that under control as well. And we'll continue to keep those types of things under control. And I think that's what's going to keep the agency moving forward in a positive direction is, like I said, just not repeating the previous mistakes and making sure that you have the safeguards in place so that all of your finances are properly recorded and that you do the drawdowns in a timely manner so that we can stay afloat. And we have the budget. It is a balanced budget for 2015, and we are cautiously optimistic and confident that we'll be able to do that. And we think 2015 is going to be a very good year for the agency.
Okay.
We're still not out in the woods yet and stuff. We just need to maintain the course which we're on and continue to do the things we do.
The budget we approved for 2015,
mm-hmm.
there's no changes to that then? Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Not at this time, no.
No.
Okay.
And also, I truly believe that, before we go and apply for any grants or, you know, really nice programs, we need to think about the impact. And
right,
that's going to take, you know, because when you look at every year and every loss, most likely is going to be related to a program that wasn't part of housing, and that, yes, it brought a lot of, you know, good for the city, but it was a burden on the agency. So,
yeah, and again, I think that also related to the same thing. You got to properly monitor the grants, do the reporting, and do your drawdowns in a timely manner. But I think any program that you have to do the proper maintenance and monitoring in order for it to work. But we will be cautious about, you know, future grants, especially with the state, because I'm not sure it's worth the headache with them, especially how long they take to pay you. And but what we will be looking at is development opportunities for increasing our affordable housing stock. And that's one of the main things that we're looking at during 2015, because the sales proceeds from the two problems that we have out there are going to be key to us being able to build some new affordable housing. And because being realistic about it, probably our best opportunity for doing the budget will be with the bond transaction. That doesn't mean that we're not going to try to get the 4% tax credits, but, you know, just being realistic about it, probably our mindset, probably our best option. I'm sorry, it's the opposite. The 9% is what's really competitive, even though they're the best option financially. It just does a competitive process, and then when you go to 4% bonds, you have a little more control, but you know you have to use more of your own money. And with the sale of those properties, we will be in a position where we can probably do a bond deal, and it'll probably be a ELF at one of the properties on 10th Street across from Colt, or the Meadows, Colton Meadows.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's what we're looking at, and we're looking at bringing in a development partner which has a history of doing those types of projects very successfully in the state of Florida. And we're going to try and piggyback on a contract with another housing authority that done one recently.
And just to clarify, as far as prior business practices that we were doing here financially, you have to remember it is industry standard for a finance group to look and say, oh, we have to make payroll. I mean, the most important thing that you have besides your core business and serving your clients is to pay the people that actually you hired and committed that you were going to pay them a certain salary to do the work. So a lot of times these transactions happen behind the scene and no one thinks it's really a big deal, and it's not when you have development activities going on and you have the cash flow. So it's not unheard of that you do a $200,000 transfer, even in a government situation, to cover those shortfalls because cash is still coming. When the deals weren't still there, the whole mindset had to change.
Because those type of transactions are supposed to be just on a temporary basis.
Right.
You know, like no more than 90 days, not go for like 6 months to a year, 2 years. That's one of the things we are be not doing.
Yeah, and the other thing on the grants too, like 21st Century, when we talk about what you actually can collect, is not that there's uncollected funds because staff or prior staff didn't do what was needed to do to collect it. It is because with that grant, it's 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
They pay 100% the first year. As you get towards year five, they expect you to leverage the grant.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is when you have a change in staff, and they're thinking, oh, you know, and then as you're looking at the rules in the state saying, hey, but it's year three.
Mm-hmm.
You should actually be leveraging. We are only going to pay this portion of the draw because of leverage. Then you realize that, okay, the communication is not there for everybody to realize when we're getting these grants what the long-term obligation is supposed to be. So for any future grants that we go after, if we know that we're going to have to provide leverage, we've already have to have in our minds how we're going to pay for it. But again, it has so much cash flow coming in at the time and income because it had three deals going that were still active
Right, and also to keep in mind, you know, like that when you have a agent that's operating normally, you can keep abreast of those types of things. But here, where at least when I came here, we had a lot of unknowns that we had to figure out, you know, for whatever reason. And it takes time to do that, especially when it's such a, I'll try to think of another word for mess, but I just can't think of a better one right now. And as I said, you know, it takes 3 to 5 years to clean up some messes. And you're seeing evidence of that with this, what we've been through in the past, you know, 3 years. But we're now on the down, we're headed down here, no longer the upward slope, we're now going on the down side of the rough side of the mountain world. And like I said, we're not in the woods yet, but I think where we are, where we're headed is very promising. We just have to continue to do what we're doing and to monitor and maintain and still be very cautious with what we do.
Okay. You know, I guess I'm old school, mm-hmm. and I'm strictly a cash flow man.
Mm-hmm.
And what looks good on the books is not good until it's in the bank.
Right.
From a cash flow standpoint, what you're projecting the drawdowns and what our expenses are, how far can we go?
Well, that's what I'm looking at. Worst case scenario is your reserves is at $304,000. We're showing on the slide. Let's say something happens, is not collectible. The other is not collectible. That's why it was so important, and that's why HUD was pushing for us to have a break-even budget. Because if you look at, even though we made lots of improvement for 2014, CLCC was still operating in a loss.
Okay.
So even though business activities could cover the salaries, the reality is we had too much staff being charged to CLCC, and then we try to talk about doing things like fees for service. But the reality is you don't want to be relying upon it because you actually have to charge your salaries to 96. Then you have to look and say, what did I do during this pay period that can be charged back to the properties as frontline? And it may, you know, again, it can be judgment about whether or not all that's allowed. So the whole reason why HUD was here and taking a special interest from Miami is because they wanted to make sure the 2015 budget actually reflected a COCC that we could support with the fees we can actually collect for 318 public housing units on management fees plus our 1,200 voucher Section 8 program.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I was saying the key is we're just going to have to make sure that with the beginning of the month, we know that we have X amount of fees that can be collected based on the 318 units and for public housing and the 1,200 vouchers for Section 8. We also know what occupancy rates we have to have at the properties to cover the properties and that staff. And we have to make sure we draw that money the first of the month. So with HUD, as far as Section 8, they go ahead and put that in the account automatically.
Yeah.
The operating subsidy, we have to actually go into lots and draw it down. So we can't say, oh, I could have drawn it on the 31st. I happen to be on vacation, I'll wait and I get back. You draw it on the 5th, you're not going to get it for 3 days, and now you're already floating operations.
Right.
Those are things that was happening because only one person could draw funds out of locks. We could see it. We could see whether or not the money was drawn, but we had no ability, if that person wasn't here, to go in and draw the funds.
Yeah, and if I could say it a different way, I think when we are now set up, now here the agent has the staff and everything, at least, you know, the senior staff now, we all share the same philosophy,
right,
and we all, you know, agree, and we come together and we are all working toward the same goal. And if we operate the way we're supposed to operate, you know, running the properties and the like, I think we'll be fine. And we can then start at a point now and say we can start to build up the reserve. We can actually start to increase as opposed to decreasing. And that's what we're looking at, say, by the end of 2015, that you'll see an increase in the reserves while we've been operating the agency, you know, at a efficient level. And we expect that, you know, going forward to continue to increase, because with the way the public housing is set up, you know, with the subsidy that you receive from the federal government, the rents that you collect, and everything, if we do that properly, we should be able to operate without having to depend upon the reserves. And so, and that's where we are. And, but we still got catching up to do in terms of catching up from those fees that we did collect and those types of things.
Of course, the big unknown is what is Congress going to budget to T-HUD?
Oh, they already approved everything. Actually,
they've already approved it.
The subsidy and admin
the
fees.
Breakdown?
It was approved at 100%, actually, which was amazing, because everybody was expecting maybe 82%, maybe not more than 92, you know, in that range.
You know, but Congress approved transportation, how much is going to HUD?
Yes, everything was done before the Congress went home for the holidays. There's actually a huge article saying congratulations to Congress, finally they did it before. So we know how much money we're going to get, at least for the first 3 months in 2015 for Section 8 public housing, which never happened before. So we're really optimistic about the outlook for next year.
And you're going to continue to see, commissioners, and the chairman, that at least as long as I'm here at ED, we're going to have a very conservative approach when it comes to spending and the like, at least for the next couple of years.
Now, will sequestration have any change any of this?
Everything that we suffered during sequestration was in 2012. Some 2013, 2012, all subsidy was cut in half, but we were able to survive through that. That's when we spent most of the reserve and money. And then for 2015, again, 100% of anything that we spent in 2014 estimated as of October. So it's pretty good. I'm happy
and I want to take an opportunity here to basically pat my staff on the back, because they've just done a yeoman's job over these past few months, and you know, I just want to say thank you to them, you know, for their attention and thing, because they've come an extremely long way. There were members of the board who had doubts, even her had doubts. But what this staff has done to get to this point here, you know, is just outstanding.
No, and I agree. I've said it before, and I say it again, that I certainly, you know, commend the staff. I know they're working hard and they're doing a great job. I think the direction we're headed, if we can stay on task, is the way to go. I would only make one comment. It's not if we do it, it's when we do it. There's no more ifs. It's when we get on track. And I'm glad to hear that I'm more than one person can do the draws. I think the culture.
That's not a good situation to be in. Right. There's only one, and then that person gone, and then you got nobody.
Right. So I think you're on the right track. That the culture has to change of how we used to operate, and I would presume now that we know that the draw is so important that the first of every month you stop doing everything and concentrate on drawing down the money, and then go back to business as usual on the next day. But we have to make sure we're drawing down when we can, and because other than that, the bottom's going to fall out. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't have the money, you can't pay the bills.
And it sounds like, you know, y'all got handle on everything now, that there were some things that were weren't sure how they worked. Like some of the state stuff, you send them the hard copies, you thought everything's fine, and now it's got to be done a different way, electronically, for them to recognize
it. They want both.
They want both.
So when they look in their website, even though they may have it on paper, they send the whole drawback, because they say, I looked on my website, I have no proof that you took 78 kids to Disney. You know, even though they may have the hard sign and sheet of it, it really is disheartening when that was, you know, things like that are submitted in September and they tell you in December, we're not going to pay that. Let us send that back to you. Not on the website.
Well, and probably because you're coming from behind, and probably some of the relationships with some of these agencies hadn't been the greatest in the past, and you got to rebuild relationships to make sure that they have faith in what's going on here. Yeah, so
that's good.
And you always
I've been in that situation before and had to rebuild some bridges and destroy it.
Right.
So the update is fine. We just have to make sure that we stay on task. What about to just quickly bring us up to date on the Abba Manor and the 10th Street? And what's the status of the environmental study and all of that kind of stuff, good stuff?
With Arbor Manor, the extensions were signed by both parties, same with 10th Street as well. And then with Arbor Manor, with the environmental, as you all know, we had to get a second environmental. There are some concerns. And basically, it passed. And there are still some concern, I think, with the water. There's a radium, I think, you know, some of the parts per million. That's above the norm, but they sent us a map, you know, showing what area that applied to is the whole state of Florida.
Radon gas.
Migration of the water, you can't control that.
And we sent that to HUD, and HUD was like, okay, you know, we're fine with it. And so the application is still proceeding there because the environmental is reviewed separately by field office, and then they tell the psych office, okay, we got environmental, we're okay with it. And so it's still moving forward with them, and so hopefully sometime in 2015 they'll approve it, because they asked a series of questions, you know, when the application is submitted, we asked all those questions, and then now we got the environmental, and so we'll wait to see what other questions they have. And then probably sometime next month, I will touch base with them on 10th Street, because they've been unusually silent about 10th Street. And I'm trying to think of any. Yeah, because they wanted the appraisal. We gave them that. And I know what it was. They thought that we had not included these properties in our 5-year plan. And one of the reasons they thought that was because the official name of Arbor Manor is Harner's,
Harner's
Green. Or
Field.
Harner's Field.
Yeah. Which is on the legal description.
Right. And that's the name we used in the plan. And of course, we pointed it out to her that, yes, it is in there. We just used the
name
official
change.
Name. Mm-hmm. And not the official name. And so everything seems to be on course with that. And I haven't talked with the potential buyer for 10th Street to see how that meeting with the city went last week. Probably to take them at some point and try and find out about that.
Okay. And we did get all of the extensions approved, and the language was changed in the 10th Street to coincide with what we discussed at the board meeting.
Yes.
So Chairman Pimentel didn't have to make any executive decisions on those.
basically, if the if we get HUD approval, and they get approval from the city for the zoning, and then they decide they'll walk away, they will forfeit.
That's good. Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's what all of us were really concerned about. I mean, you walk away from the deal after everything was done. That's why I said, wait a minute. This is what we need.
Yep.
Well, they get everything, and then they say, all
right,
goodbye.
Right.
No,
right.
We take your money.
Yep. Yeah. So I'm glad that that went through. Okay, anything under other business?
Just wanted to confirm that everyone has got their email, LHA email account set up. And the only one commissioner that I'm aware of is still having an issue. And they come in tomorrow.
In the morning.
Yeah, tomorrow. And we'll just help him set it up here.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, because I had trouble setting mine up, and he had to set mine up. Yeah.
Okay. No, my wife is my IT person. She got mine set up.
That's what I need.
Always good being a good time to go to the better half.
Okay. Anything else?
I just have to remember to check it every day, see if there's anything.
Right.
What I'll probably do is, I think the board packet is ready. This time I'll send it to both your private email as well as the LHA email.
just to make sure it's working.
That it's working. And then next month's meeting, we'll probably get you to LHA.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Anything else from staff that you need to tell us about? Okay, just continue the good work, and I know it's...
Having a big New Year's party here tomorrow evening.
I know it.
They're going to be running up till 5, though, coming up year reports in, so...
No, I think everybody should be commended on the job they're doing under the circumstances, and we really appreciate it.
Yeah.
So, other than that, anything for Commissioner Pimentel, anything to add?
I have to say, you know, in all my years I spent at New York Telephone, that's what it is before it was Verizon, we had the philosophy that anything that I did, everyone had to know about it. You all had to know how to do it. And the idea was if I went outside and got hit by a bus, someone has to be able to just do what I did immediately.
Right. Yep.
There should not be a question. There should not be a discussion. You have to just follow what I'm doing. And that's what we need. It can't be like one or two. It has to be, if anything, every manager should know what everyone else is doing. Every management person, every e-board person, you should always have the same privileges that, say, that lower manager has, so you can always follow up and do that job that they can't do in the event they got hit by a bus.
Yep.
You never know. And the reason they would say that is you never know. Life is so, you know, up in the air. You never know what happens.
That's right.
That's what we need, more people that are always on the road.
Yeah,
like
the
you
bus
said,
goes right by here all the time.
You know?
Hey, I haven't got alligators.
Well, just in case they get eaten by an alligator. Make this Floridian, you know?
Cross-training.
Everyone has to be cross-trained. You have to have that redundancy. And you have Outlook calendar. Use it for those pivotal dates that we need to keep. And the people who are, they have to be shared on it.
Right.
You know, if you have to do it a week before, we have to submit this so we can get this, you know, this grant or something. Have 4 people on this calendar, even if it's just like one of your manager or specialists who are make sure you're included on that date and you're all flagged as high importance. And when that flag comes up, you check with that person. Have you done this? Oh, I was meeting. No, I don't want a meeting to have you done this.
Right,
because
right.
If it's affecting our cash flow and it's affecting hundreds of thousands of dollars, we really need to do that. And use Outlook calendar. It's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, you can invite as many people as you want and put high importance. And that flag will beep. It'll come on your phone. It'll beep everywhere, that red flag. And that's what you need to have so you can meet these deadlines. And you'll never miss these deadlines. And I'm telling you, and you immediately go to that. Did you meet this? No. Well, why aren't you doing it? Well, stop what you're doing. Are you having lunch? Well, quit that lunch. Get to what you're doing.
Because
money, it's all about money. And if we're losing money because of deadlines, That's unheard of.
Yeah.
There's something I tell everyone, and this is it. I said, people who procrastinate are going to wake up in the morning one day and find out it's too late. And when it comes to those deadlines, that's exactly it. You know, yo, I'm going to do it today. Boom, it's too late.
Yep. Sounds like the rapture.
That's right.
That's
the truth. But it's the truth. Procrastinate is our worst enemy. So yeah. If it has to be done today, let's do it today.
Let's do it today.
Why can't we do it today?
Right.
You know?
And I have one other thing before you all adjourn. With the committee's permission, I would like to send an email to the commissioners telling them that we're not
Please do.
The next meeting will be on the 12th.
Next meeting
will be a regular board meeting on the 12th.
Right. We're satisfied that we don't need to call a special meeting. Yep.
Okay.
From what we've seen today, and then we'll present it to the full board on the 12th.
Okay.
So be prepared to present it on the 12th to the full board. Okay.
Good.
There being no further business, it's now 3:02, and we will call this meeting adjourned.
Okay. Have a wonderful, happy new year.
Right,
right.
Have a good new year, everybody.
Just erase that. Yeah, 3:02
meeting adjourned. 3:02 meeting adjourned. Don't forget, don't spend all your time in meetings now. Get some work.